Hey, it's Adam Grant from Work Life, a podcast from TED. This episode is brought to you by Freshworks. Freshworks believes that complexity is the enemy of efficiency. So stop wrestling with bloated, expensive service software that takes forever to implement an update, where ROI is someday, not today. You've been overcharged and underserved for way too long. Uncomplicate with Freshservice for IT and Freshdesk for customer support. And with Freshworks AI-assisted service software, you'll work smarter, not harder. Freshworks uncomplicates. Learn more at freshworks.com.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to the Game Football Podcast from The Times. We've got a tight away win, a 7-1 thrashing, and one of the all-time smash and grabs. The English teams delivered the perfect hat-trick of results in the midweek Champions League action. On today's show, we'll discuss wins of differing kinds for Liverpool, Arsenal and Aston Villa in the round of 16 first legs, debate the best goalkeeping performances we've ever seen, and find out about Billy Gilmour's life at the top of Serie A with Napoli. I'm Tom Clark, and joining me today we have the chief correspondent for The Times and Sunday Times, Martin Samuel, the former striker turned columnist, Tony Cascarino, and the former footballer turned journalist, Gregor Robertson. It's here as usual. Chaps, loads to talk about. The Champions League just never lets us down, does it, this season? Let's start with Liverpool. Recency bias, as always. It was last night's game. I mean, I could go anywhere. I've got loads of things to talk about. I'm so excited about talking about this game. It was absolutely bonkers. Martin, I'll come to you first just to kind of set the scene on your thoughts of this game. I described it there as at the opening as one of the all-time smash and grabs. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah. I think that's very fair. I can't remember. They got marmalised, didn't they, Liverpool?
Yeah, great.
They got absolutely marmalised. And somehow ended up winning. And the strange thing was, as the second half went on, you're sort of watching it thinking, they're going to nick this. I can see what's going to happen here. They're going to nick this with about 5 minutes to go. They're going to score. And I saw Manchester United do it in probably the result that got Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. The job was away in PSG when they probably didn't deserve it. And that was an incredibly fortuitous penalty.
That remarkable handball that was going 50 yards over the bar.
Exactly. That no one can. How's that? And then Marcus Rashford stood up and took it brilliantly. But even that wasn't like this one, because PSG last night was so good. It's possibly the best I've ever seen PSG play. And I've seen, I think I was the only English journalist in the stadium when they played Bayern Munich that time during COVID, when you couldn't get in unless you were argued my way in with UEFA. You couldn't get in unless you were from either Germany or France. It was Bayern Munich versus PSG. But even that one there, PSG weren't as good as they are.
Do we think it's also because of where we're viewing it as, the English media, where we've seen Liverpool be so brilliant all season and that they were made to look pretty average?
Well, I haven't seen Mo Salah have a game as ineffectual as that for a long, long time, possibly this season. I thought there were excellent performances in the Liverpool team. Yeah. I don't mean to decry them. I thought Trent had a very, very good game. And obviously, that is, I think Alisson said by his own admission, that is the performance of a lifetime.
Yes.
And that's the only thing you would say with this game. The only thing, because there's a tendency to think, oh, it's over, Liverpool have won. And you think, well, if PSG played like that at Anfield, it's game on again. Mm. Because, Alisson says that's the performance of a lifetime. Well, you're not going to have two performances of a lifetime. So, if they get the same number of chances, if they come at Liverpool the same way, they were really hard to handle.
Yeah.
Really, really hard to handle.
Tony, do you think then, but firstly about the game, but also Martin's kind of teed up that prospect about that second leg with the slight implication that it is Anfield as well. Because I agree with you, Martin, you go into it thinking, well, even at 0-0, I was thinking if they ate this 0-0 to Anfield, then it's advantage Liverpool. It's even more
it is
so.
Advantage. Well, it is advantage.
Yeah, of course it is.
I mean, it is advantage. I'm not denying that. It is advantage.
But there is a big but. I had a conversation before we came on air, and it was about the second leg, and I just said, look, PSG, and I said this on radio at the weekend, are a much better team over the last 3 months than they were before Christmas. When they had the break, the treble, what they call it, the break, they were having loads of issues. One was with Dembele, then they get, obviously, I'll never get his name right.
Kvaratskhelia.
Kvaratskhelia. Call him Kev.
Call him.
Like Dave at Chelsea. Ask
call him Kvaratskhelia.
Kvaratskhelia helps.
Okay.
Helps.
Well,
but Kvaratskhelia, yeah.
Yeah, when they brought him in, that was a big change. And PSG, I will tell you how they will play. They will play exactly like a home game. They will. They'll go to Anfield and try and...
Even at Anfield?
Absolutely.
Even in the Champions League?
And this is what scares me, because I think Liverpool will have to adopt a slight attitude of going, we might have to step off these, because if we overload, they're explosive with pace. Whether it's Hakimi, whether it's Dembele...
Barcola.
Kev. You know, Kev, yeah, you know, just
go with Kev for now. It's fine.
Yeah, just their pace in turning a game. They are a very good side. I think that I said before they're the dark horses, but this competition's been bad to them. You know, whether that's through the 4-0 victory against Barcelona and then lose 6-1 away. You know, they've had some really good sides, and the French league has always been diminished to a degree. There is some truth in that. But not concerning PSG. This team now work their socks off. Have you come away from that game and think about just not the chances and the saves, but think of the work rate of PSG? You got to be careful.
Yeah.
And I think Arne Slot knows that. This tie is nowhere near done.
Yeah.
They're nowhere near. This is a very dangerous game still for Liverpool.
I mean, it is a different team from the team that Arsenal played.
Oh, absolutely. 2-0.
Don't forget, this is the same competition this season.
Good
and they
point.
Were woeful. People are going, what's happened to this team?
Yeah.
And then you see them now. I think a bit too much can be made about how they've shed this, you know, Galactico era tag. Clearly, they've had and lost three of the biggest players on the planet. But a lot of the teams still kind of broadly the same. They have just signed Kvaratskhelia for 70 million euros in January. And he's an absolute superstar. Love watching him play. It's like a combination of like real kind of grace and subtlety, but also like just a battering ram. Do you know what I mean? He's a big specimen when he's running at you.
Yeah.
But he's also got... There was that dummy in the box.
In the first half.
Oh, my God. He just dropped his shoulder and everyone fell. Ali McCoy's gone.
Ali McCoy's lost his
he's
mind.
Done me. He's done me up in the stand.
It was
he's great. He's
right.
great. Absolutely. He's great to watch. And I was surprised when they brought him off. But there were so many times where he got the ball... like after turnovers, and there just seemed to be lots of space on front of Liverpool's back four, and they were dragging them across. You've never seen Liverpool's back four be dragged about as much in a game this season. So that was what was really
startling. And Martin was right as well that, you know, Trent, I thought, done unbelievable considering, and I thought Robertson, likewise, he had an unbelievable time.
Yeah,
Dembele is so quick.
So I thought it was interesting listening after the game, because I was editing last night and listening to Elliot and Alisson in the TV commentary after the game. Obviously, so much has been made of Alisson's performance, and we'll come on to talk about him and goalkeepers in general. But we're all in agreement that defensively Liverpool did quite well despite conceding quite a lot of chances.
Slot said in the second half it was different. Although he still had lots of chances, there's a lot that were kind of shots from outside the box and stuff. First half, there were a few that you think, my God, how's that not coming in?
And they get two.
And they had one chopped off.
And they get two enormous pieces of luck. Because that offside is exactly what Arsene Wenger is trying to get rid of in football, basically, which is the idea that, you know, your heel can be offside. That's number one. It's offside by the law. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
But it's very lucky, really, because there's no judgment involved in that. That's just... that you know, that's your horse ducking as it gets to the finishing line and the other one's on the opposite stride. And that looked like a penalty to me.
The shove by Konate.
Yeah.
I was going to bring it up. You know, Gregor?
It's right on the borderline, yeah. I mean,
Stop sitting on the fence all the time.
When you watched the back in the replay, I thought he's going to be done here.
Yeah.
But
what are you looking at me like for?
Well, he's going to tell. How's sitting on the fence?
He said it's right on the borderline.
Well, that's a decision.
Thanks, Tone. Thanks, mate.
Sitting on the fence is actually saying making a decision on something.
Former players' union here. Anyway,
no.
So you say not. You say not a foul then, or
no? I thought it was a pen. I immediately thought he's going to be so lucky if they don't first of all go off and get a penalty given against them. Look, Liverpool, we've had this conversation before. A lot of things have gone for Liverpool this year. Make the most of it, because there's sometimes when injuries and other things go against you. But last night was one of them nights.
Yeah, certainly. Gregors, let's see if we can agree on this. I just wanted to bring up a little moment for another PSG player, Nuno Mendes. What a lad. The left back. Oh, my God. I honestly thought sometimes when he was playing against Salah, I was like, he'd be a better bloody winger than Salah at this rate. He was absolutely unbelievable. Yeah. And in body, I was being sarcastic, Tony. Don't worry, get carried away. The Liverpool guy, what? You can't say that about Mo Salah. Jumping in, nearly jumping across the table at me. Anyway, but I thought he embodied that physicality that you were talking about, Tony, as
well. Everywhere. I mean, Yael Neves in midfield was incredible. You know, Bettina, I just was... Last night, I came away, and you're right, watching a player handle Mo Salah so well. And look, you'd like to think... I mean, the big thing is, Arne Slot's not taken off Salah, even when he's had in different games. He's left him right to the end, knowing he can get a goal. And it was that night, you've called it spot on, you've just gone, it's just not going to happen tonight.
Yeah.
Even though it was late on, and look, we'll talk probably about the substitutions, because all of them worked.
Yeah,
you've got to give credit to the manager for that.
Yeah, well,
and Nunes, who we've dug out a little bit a couple of weeks ago.
I thought he was going to score when he came on, because like you, Martin, we were all sat on the editing floor, increasingly going, "This is 1-0 Liverpool, isn't it? This is 1-0. This is 1-0."
That's a great piece of centre forward play, though. A long ball, and I think it was Marquinhos. He's bullied basically in the air, brought it down, and then just
bought
Harvey Elliott a little second to catch up a play, and then laid it perfectly onto his path.
Fabulous.
Does that get him
Harvey
in...
Elliott as well, though. The run is so smart.
Does that get him in the lineup for the home game? Do you think he'll go with...
What, Nunes?
Nunes?
No.
But I don't know.
Why would you? What?
Because of
just for that?
Marquinhos was so comfortable against Jota and
yeah, the physicality is maybe a different point.
But if you were looking at the second leg and thinking, well, we might have to counter these on a few occasions... Certainly,
because you've got the 1-0 goal as well,
and he has got pace, and he is quicker than Jota. I just think it's something you'd probably have to consider, that more than the away leg is that Nunes could play that part of that physicality as well.
Yeah, interesting. Well, obviously we've waited to talk about it. Let's bring up that goalkeeping performance from Alisson. Martin, I'm not gonna name him, but there was a member of the editing team who this morning said, "I've got a slightly controversial hot take for you, Tom, that I wanted to throw in on the podcast." Alisson just doing his job. Very good goalkeeper, making very good saves. He just so happens to have made a lot of them in the same game.
In the same game. Look, you can always
discuss.
Yeah. You can say
not
that.
Not my view, listeners, by the way. I'm not.
But you can say that about anybody, can't you? You can say about a centre forward.
I don't even think Roy Keane would have said that.
Yeah. But you could say that about Mo Salah. He's just doing his job. Everyone's just doing their job. You know, all the world. Pep Guardiola's just doing his job. You know. It was a fabulous. It was a fabulous performance. He's kept them in the tie. They could have been out of the tie by half time.
It's the variety of the safety.
Yeah, absolutely. And he was so commanding, and he was so in control, and gave you such confidence that this could be their night. Because as well as that part, there's two parts of that little hunch, isn't there? There's the part of you that thinks, they could nick this. They're going to go out the other end, and they're going to nick this. It's got that feeling about it. But that also needs you to think, and there's no way PSG are getting past this goalkeeper tonight. And that was the growing feeling as well in the second half. You think they're not going to beat this guy tonight. He's exceptional.
Just on that theme, Tony, we're going to come and talk about other great goalkeeping performances. But as a forward, if you're in that moment, like Martin's just said there, the PSG side, when you're facing someone who... Does that get in your mind as a forward where you think, Christ's sake, we're just not going to score? Because it then did have that feel almost like as the game wore on in the last 10 minutes... They don't start creating as much. Their substitutions maybe didn't work as well as Liverpool's. Yeah. Does it start getting in your mind when you're facing an opposition goalkeeper that's performing so well?
Yeah, well, of course you do. You think, what have I got to do to beat him? It's like doing a training session with goalkeepers and you have a particular morning, you're shooting, he pulls out every save in the world in a training session. You think, can't beat him today. And then on Saturday, he drops one in.
Yeah.
You know? But, yeah. Now, what I would say, there's something really important here about Alisson. Is that I remember a save that Peter Shilton made against Scotland from Kenny Dalglish, and it was a save where they're diving and it's in the top left-hand corner and you think it's a left-hand save, but he uses his right arm to get that hand. Peter Shilton did it. Alisson done it twice last night where he's dived to the top left, but the save has come from the right hand. Now, I had a long conversation about this years ago, about goalkeepers that use the arm you think they wouldn't, because they won't get it with their left, but because apparently you can get more leverage and about 6 inches more by using your right, stretching. You can stretch and arc your body. And it's amazing to watch. And Alisson did that twice last night. That they're the incredible saves for me, where that is training, practice. That's a coach working with a goalkeeper on saves that are slightly different. Because you don't see that save very often. You normally see the goalkeeper dive, goes past their left hand.
Yeah.
But the one with a right hand,
yeah,
that they can stretch even further.
It's wonderful. This looks like you're in a Pilates class. No, we need to make sure we put this on YouTube. Yes.
That is being worked on in training.
Yeah.
Because Keller has done similar things, not to that level, but it's made that type of save. So I'm going to give a lot of credit to the goalkeeping coach at Liverpool as well, because that is a save that's been manufactured out of work on the training ground. Because that's just not, just a chance by chance that he's made them saves twice.
Yeah.
That's knowing Absolutely. He can save it with his right hand. And normally it's in the opposite corner.
See, for me, it's the 1v1s. Mm. Like where he knows the moment to come out and close the space between himself and the attacker to narrow the angle.
Yeah.
And then he just like is a huge presence. And when the ball hits him, it's like he's still just solid. Yeah. there was one from Dembele in the first half. And then there was one from Barcola when he had the kind of two bites at the cherry. Mm. And there's like he was almost like kind of getting back off the ground and his arm was just planted in the ground and I think it struck him and then it was just like
and you think
he was just making himself so big.
Think the goal that Liverpool scored where you're looking at the
exactly,
and
the opposite.
Thinking could his hands have been
Perhaps
stronger there?
Should
he have got to it? Because he does get to it.
Mm. It's the one where he was going the wrong way with the right hand save. Like I think it's Kvaratskhelia goes through the legs. Yeah. That's a great save. A great save. A wonderful performance. Paul Joyce, in his ratings, giving him 10 out of 10.
Yeah. You can't give him 9.
Absolutely.
Yeah, sure.
No, but
what
I'm
did
just,
he do wrong?
Absolutely. But it's an interesting thing, isn't it? And Paul Joyce rang in after he'd sent all of his copy and he said, I think I'm going to give him a 10. But also, Martin, you could probably, as a journalist, you're like, God, that's a bit of a moment
to give someone
a 10. But I said to him, I was like, if you're not going to give 10 for this, then when are you going to give a 10?
I think I have given a 10, but I'm not sure. I might not have. And I think the only person you can really give a 10 to is a goalkeeper, because you always think...
Nadia Comaneci?
That's your... because you always think, I haven't seen everything. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So when you look at an outfield player, you're thinking, he's bound to have misplaced a pass and I haven't seen it or whatever. He's bound to have done something. There's bound to be some imperfection in this. Whereas with a goalkeeper, you think you've seen the whole performance. You can look at it and go, well, that's a 10. He hasn't done anything wrong. You're not going to knock anything off because there wasn't a goal kick that was absolutely perfect. Yeah. Whereas with an outfield player, because you're writing... And everything at the time, you always think, I bet I've missed something. I bet if I gave him a 10, someone would go, oh, well, he gave the ball away 4 times in the match or whatever. You go, oh, okay, should have been a 9. Then,
there's something for all footballers out there listening to this podcast to aspire to. Martin Samuel need to get a 10 from him.
I don't really do the ratings anymore. Very, very pleased. I can tell people about the ratings. I'll tell you what happens with the ratings. If you're doing a runner in the evening, what's called a runner, so that's a running match report. So for people at home, if you don't know, this is how it works. If you've got, say, 1,000 words, you want to be about 600 down by half time, and then you've got 400 words on the whistle, which on the whistle actually means about 5 minutes before the end, if you're lucky. And so you're almost too busy writing about the match to watch it by the end of it, which is a real problem. So everyone's got a sort of formula, which is, you know, because you don't see everyone. So you know everyone who's played really well. You can always spot that. You know everyone who's had a nightmare. And I never used to give a particularly low mark because I always thought if someone's had a nightmare, they don't need me to kick them up the nuts the following morning as well. So I never ever went below four, I don't think. And then you've got this rump of players in the middle and you're thinking, right, okay, if I've noticed him touch the ball twice,
and
this is how it works, and then people pay, particularly footballers, pay huge amounts, you know, pay huge amounts of attention to these ratings. So you're thinking, right, if I've seen him touch the ball twice, and both times it's been all right, he's going to get seven. If I've seen him touch the ball once he's given it away, and the other time he's getting a six. I mean, look, this is very loose. And if I've seen him touch the ball twice and he's given the ball away both times, he's getting a five. And that it's a very loose approximation of how it's done. But I defy anybody to write 1,000 words with 5 minutes to go, have the 1,000 words done with 5 minutes to go, and to claim that they have accurately assessed 22 players. It's not feasible.
I've actually always been in favour of getting rid of the ratings because I think, as you say, readers and people get so distracted with them. Oh. I'm like, read all the other stuff instead. Anyway, we're getting
or into... Or have somebody whose job it is to write one, for 90 minutes.
Go on, Tom. But I want to get into... Because I want to get into goalkeeping.
I know, I've got to do this really quickly. I phoned him once at the Times because one particular journalist had put every player as a six. And I said, that's impossible, right? So I complained.
When you were still a player or now you're as a columnist?
No, when I started as a columnist. And I said, that's impossible. No, not everybody can get the same mark. That can't be. They all get sixes. So then I felt terrible afterwards. But anyway, in France, in Marseille, they used to do it by the weather. They used to give you weather. It weren't markings of 5 out of 10. It would be thunderstorm and lightning. then it'll be cloud and rain. Then it would be cloud and a bit of sun for average. So well, obviously cloud and lightning was terrible.
Allison's is a bright sunny day.
Oh, it would be the sun. It would be literally the sun.
The most beautiful sunny day.
So you never actually got to the perfect.
Did you ever get a sun? You must have got a few suns in your time.
Yeah, I think I did.
When I was
at a paper once.
And right, this has got to be quick because I want to get back to best goalkeepers.
We can do it. But it's a 1994 World Cup. And anyway, about a month after the 1994 World Cup, I'm in the office and the phone goes. It's Brian Warno's phone. And someone says, is Brian Warno there? So I said, no, mate, he's on holiday. He's, you know. Oh, he said, can I help you? You know, he said, well, I wanted to talk to him about his ratings for the World Cup final. He said, because he gave Brazy star man. So I said, yeah. He said, but he missed the penalty. I said, yeah, look, let me just explain how that one worked. I said, because of the deadlines, I said, the ratings for that game were done at half time. I said, it went to extra time and penalties. I said, so there was 45 minutes plus another 30 minutes plus a penalty shootout. It was 75 minutes. I said, but the ratings were actually done after 45 minutes. We had no choice because we had to do that for the first edition. I know that. I said, I wasn't at the final, but I do know that. I said, you know, so all I can do is apologise. I said, but they're only the ratings. He said, yeah, but he said, I missed out on winning the competition. He said, because the other fellow had Brazy as a star man. He said, and he got man of the match, so he got an extra 5 points. He said, it cost me £100,000.
Oh, if ever there was an argument for doing away with
get rid of the ratings.
And I'm like,
get rid of them.
Yeah, yeah, I can see you got a point there. I said, I'll take your number. I'll give you a call. You're like,
Jesus, well, I didn't see that coming.
It's
that
a kill master, isn't it?
No, no, yours was great. I'm either in favour of getting rid of the ratings, like, you know, Alison, it ends with Alison. 10 out of 10, can't get any better than that. No more ratings. Bring back the suns and overcasts. Anyway, Alison was brilliant. Let's talk about some other best goalkeeping performances we can remember. Tony, I'm going to come to you as a striker. You must have faced some great goalkeepers.
Yeah, Neville Southall stands in.
Is that for a particular performance or just the best goalkeepers you've faced?
He would be probably the best goalkeeper I've ever faced, yeah. And Big Neville was just a bit of everything. His ability with his feet as well. But when he come at you, he literally scared the life out of you because he was so aggressive at attacking the player. Most definitely him. I remember playing against Barthez as well. I thought Barthez, I know it obviously went from Marseille to Manchester United, but Barthez was an exceptional goalkeeper. Probably his lifestyle outside the game plagued him slightly, should I say.
Yeah.
But yeah, you have that. So Peter Shilton made a save from me. I made my debut at Villa and I've headed the perfect. I'm running away as I've headed it. I pinged it in the bottom corner. Peter Shilton, at 40 years old, on my debut, has got down and turned it round the post. And I remember thinking, how on earth has he got that?
Glad you're over it, though.
No, right? I still say it's
fuming. Absolutely fuming.
But it's like, how is he at 40 years old, got down to that bottom corner and literally turned it round? It was one of them moments where you just... Because I was off. I thought he was in. It was
debut goal, lovely stuff.
Here we go. Villa fans, we've got Tony Cascarino in the air singing. I had to wait 7 games then to get my first goal.
Oh, yeah, definitely not over it. Gregor, best goalkeepers you've played with? Best goalkeepers to have behind you in the fence for when you were making all those cock-ups?
We were talking before, Tony and I.
All that, like, you've seen.
We were talking before, though, about, you know, there's also some that have been that were a bit unheralded. Yeah. There was a goalkeeper at Chesterfield when we won the league, and he played there for a long time, and I think he should have played a lot higher. And he's Tommy Lee. He's now the head of goalkeeping.
Was he a Manchester United youth player?
Yeah, he's now head of goalkeeping at Manchester United Academy. He was just a wonderful goalkeeper. Like, we called him the Cat. It's not original, but he could. He's shot stopping those one on ones. He was great at doing the kind of almost the splits. You know, you put one foot, your heel down, and you're doing a kind of one knee down, and you're so low to the ground, and he's like that.
Yeah.
And he was just brilliant at 1v1s, great reactions. He wasn't 6 foot.
Right.
And I think a lot of people looked at him and thought he's not big enough, but I think he could have played higher. So he always sticks out for me as the best I played with.
That era, that's the interesting thing. When you look at the size of goalkeepers, you look at the size of footballers generally.
You ever met Benetti?
Yeah, absolutely.
Unbelievable how small he is.
Yeah.
Honestly.
It's all coming out on the show today.
No, but it's true.
It's true, honestly.
He was a small guy.
You couldn't believe he was in goal. You look at the goal and him in it, and feel like he was an under 13.
Honestly. Chris Turner. Remember Chris Turner, who kept goal for Manchester United? I think he was about 5'8" or 5'9" or something like that. It would never happen now. Paul Parker was a centre-half. For a lot of his career, played centre half. Yeah. It just wouldn't happen now. People forget that when Jaap Stam first came to Manchester United, he didn't get off to a flyer. They played Gary Neville alongside him for some of that season.
Gary Neville played centre back a lot, didn't he?
Yeah.
Martin, what about the best goalkeeping performances you've seen then in your
media? That would be up there.
Reporting.
Alisson would be up there.
Yeah.
Alisson would definitely be up there. There was one at West Ham, and it's not partisanship on my part. Ludek McCroskos won against Manchester United in the 1-1 draw that delivers the title.
The one Blackburn, the title.
Yeah, delivers the title to Blackburn. That was just incredible. That was another one of those games. I know, and he did concede a goal, but it was another one of those games where he just kept West Ham. West Ham would have lost that by about 5 or 6 if it wasn't for Ludek McCroskos.
I got a few others just suggested from on the office floor, and as I say, we're going to have a piece on the Times website that you can read by the time this podcast is out. A few people saying Peter Schmeichel against Newcastle for Manchester United in the 1-0 win at St James's Park in 1996. I think it was the year they won the league. Eric Cantona goes down the other end, scores a goal. Lots of saves from Les Ferdinand. Goalkeepers who weren't good enough with their feet, so can't make it in modern football. David De Gea. For Manchester United against Spurs, at one point held the record 11 saves in a game. 1-0 win for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
David De Gea had incredible. So, I mean, David De Gea won Manchester United's Player of the Year.
3 years
in three, might even have been four. Yeah. I mean, and it was like player's player. It's the one that the players voted for and the one the fans voted for. He swept the board, yeah. Three or four seasons. Now, we can argue that could be to do with Manchester United's outfield players at the time, but it was also that he was saving them week in, week out.
I'd say
no mention of the Polish keeper.
Jan Tomaszewski.
You can mention him now.
We've mentioned him now.
There you go.
Jan Tomaszewski. Described as a clown by Brian Clough before the game. He's a clown. Their goalkeeper's a clown. He then has the game of his life and knocks us out of the World Cup.
One of the most annoyingly cool goalkeeping performances, I've got to say, is probably Ricardo for Portugal against England in whether the World Cup or the Euro, I can't remember where. Saves a load of penalties, then takes his gloves off and bangs in the winner from the penalty spot.
Remember Courtois in the Champions League final against Liverpool too. Yeah. There's been quite a few with Courtois. Another one I have to say is Fraser Forster against Barcelona when Celtic won 2-1 against Barca.
Yeah.
Messi later spoke about it and said, he said he described him as not a human. And he's like, we thought we should sign him. And and it's another one who now looks like a relic.
Yeah.
But
he
was the same. Yeah. He was a massive presence in the goal. And they had 8-9% possession, 23 attempts on goal. He made 13 saves. It was a joke.
Absolutely brilliant.
There's the Villarreal goalkeeper. Is it Villarreal? When they beat Manchester United in the Europa League final?
Europa League, yeah.
Yeah, well, he takes the penalty as well, doesn't he?
He
saves... He saves De Gea's penalty, and then
he gets the penalty 11, doesn't it?
And then gets his own, or gets his own, and then
saves.
Yeah, it's like the goalkeepers' union.
You'd give him a 10 for that, wouldn't you?
I tell you. Apart
from the fact that it was 10-all at that time, so he failed to save 10 penalties before that.
You've had your bit of therapy about that Villa moment. It's all right. Yeah. We'll get Peter Shilton on at some point in the future. And you can have it, you can have it out with him. Loads of brilliant suggestions. If you've got more, and I'm sure you have, get in touch with me, tom.clark@thetimes.co.uk. Just wanted to quickly mention Bayern Munich's win. Not necessarily for the goals. Harry Kane in amongst the goals as well. But listeners, if you have not seen Jamal Musiala's flick nearly creating a wonderful goal for Paulinho, make sure you go and check it out. We've all seen this, right?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah.
What a boy. Honestly, you just love watching him play, don't you? Little flick over the defender's head. You'd love playing against players like that, wouldn't you?
Absolutely not. Elise having another...
Yeah, another assist.
Cross. Yeah. Beautiful cross, yeah.
Wonderful stuff. We're going to take a break
now. Make it a nice open league next season once they've bought by Leverkusen's best player in the summer, as they've announced they're going to. So they've beaten them 3-0, then they take their best player, and then everyone wonders why Bayern Munich win the league by 20 points next season.
But it does make them great to watch in the Champions League, Mark.
That's what matters.
Loads still to come in part two of the show, including talking about Arsenal and Aston Villa. But it's time for a break, so it's time for the Mark Hughes sponsored quiz question. Who am I talking about when I say a former footballer who played as a goalkeeper for Millwall, Leicester, Tottenham, Southampton and Fulham, and won the Football League with both Leicester and Tottenham? Find out after the
Craig
break.
Scandal.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Quince believes that quality products shouldn't be a luxury, whether it's a breathable 100% European linen shirt or effortless stretch cotton pants. All of their high-end, top-quality pieces are about half the cost of similar brands. Yes, really. By working directly with top artisans and cutting out the middlemen, Quince gives you luxury pieces without the markup. Get the high-end goods you deserve at quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You know what's wild? Most people are still overpaying for car insurance just because it's a pain to switch. That's why there's Jerry. Jerry's the only app that compares rates from over 50 insurers in minutes and helps you switch fast with no spam calls or hidden fees. Drivers who save with Jerry could save over $1,300 a year. Before you renew your car insurance policy, do yourself a favor. Download the Jerry app or head to jerry.ai/ACAST.
Welcome Welcome back to the Game Football Podcast from The Times. I'm Tom Clark and I've got Martin Samuel, Tony Cascarino and Gregor Robertson with me. Listeners, I do apologise. I missed out a key word when I was asking the question earlier. I said Football League. I meant Football League Cup. League Cup, that was the key bit of this player won. Martin Samuel, straight in with the answer. Are you going to give the actual answer this time as you did in the break? Or now that we're recording again?
Am I going to say Craig Scanlon, the legendary guitarist from The Fall?
Can say both.
I can say both. I can start by saying who Craig Scanlon was, but the answer was Casey Keller.
Casey Keller, very good. Gregor Robertson and Tony Cascarino absolutely stumped. Thank God Martin Samuel was here with the answer to the quiz question. Let's get back into the Champions League action this week then. One team not needing a great goalkeeping display were Arsenal. 7-1 winners at PSV Eindhoven. I've got a good pal of mine who's an Arsenal fan. And I just said to him, I was like, maybe just win the Champions League, mate. Just, you know, don't worry about this Premier League. Who cares about that? Six different goal scorers, including Cagliafiore, who in a few weeks ago, I think, on this show, we joked about maybe he could play up front. He looks a bit like a striker. Good, pretty good finish. Tony, I'll come and ask you about that in a minute. But is there any sense that Arsenal, Martin, I'll come to you on this, about this competition? They're playing very well in this competition and don't seem to be able to necessarily... It's getting to the point where it's a bit like two different teams, isn't it?
Well, if you are one of the best teams in the Premier League, as Arsenal undoubtedly are, you are obviously in with a good chance in the Champions League. I don't see that as any surprise whatsoever. And how good Arsenal have been over a number of decades, it's always been a surprise to me that, you know, that they got to that one final and were beaten by Barcelona, and that they've never gone deeper than that, apart from that one time. So yeah, absolutely. Look, PSV were woeful defensively. Number one, there was a stroke of luck. I mean, PSV hit the bar.
Yes,
I think,
early on,
with
yeah,
it
yeah.
As a nil-nil, yeah. And Miles Lewis-Skelly should have been sent off. I mean, the first booking that he got looked a little bit harsh to me, but having been booked, the second offence is without a doubt a yellow card, and then they're down to 10. They were 2-0 up at that time. They probably